And I must warn you that it's a little emotional, so yeah. I don't know if you can hear, this is all the volume. Can you turn up the volume a little bit?
My business also are not going very well. Krishna says,
can you hear?
Somebody wants me actually devotee of Krishna.
Let me see if I can get it any louder.
In this way, gradually.
Get it here now?
I became attached to these Gauri Math activities. By the grace of Krishna, my business also was not going very well. Krishna says, Jussahun and Gildani, Harisheta Thanam Sami. If somebody wants to be actually devotee of Krishna, at the same time keeps his material attachment, then Krishna's business is takes out everything material so that same person he becomes, dependent on Krishna. So that actually happened to my life. I was obliged to come to this Mumbai to take up this very seriously. And I was dreaming that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is calling me. Please come out here. So I was sometimes horrified. Oh, what is this? I have to give up my family life. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is calling. I have to take sannyas. Oh, I was horrified. But I saw several times calling. Anyway, it is by His grace I was forced to give up my family life and so-called business life. And He brought me somewhere or other in preaching His gospel. So, this is a memorable day. What He deserved, I'm trying little bit, and you are all helping me. So I have to thank you more. You are actually representative of my Guru Maharaj. Because you are helping me in executing the order of my Guru Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I hope you are able to hear that well. This is Srila Prabhupada giving his own sannyas speech. Jarada Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi jana valaga girigara dari Gopi jana valaga girigara dari Yashodanandana Bhajjana Ranjana Yashodanandana Bhajjana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Aganachari Yamuna Tira Aganachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Just put it on your lap. Just put the medal on your lap. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balava Girivada Dari Gopi Jana Balava Girivada Dari Yashoda Nandana Vajjana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vajjana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Kunja Bihari Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Pariva Jakacharya Astotara Shata Sri Srimadis Divine Grace Abhay Charna Arvinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem se kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhakta Murti Jaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Sham Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jaya Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jaya Shri Gangamai Ki Jaya Shri Jamunamai Ki Jaya Shrimati Tulsi Devi Narayan Ki Jaya His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya The Lordship Shri Shri Radha Sham Sundar Ki Jaya Shri Lordship Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jaya Lordship Shri Shri Gaunitai Ki Jaya Lordship Shri Shri Lakshmi Narasimhadev Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Iskandu Ramanreti Dham Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the lotus feet of Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, entitled How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali. Text number 4. Nijagraho jasavira Kalim Digvijaye Kochit. Nripalinga Dharam Sudram. Nantam Go Mitunam Pada. Nijagraho Jasavira. Kalim Digvijaye Kochit. Nripalinga Dharam Sudram. Dantam Go Mitunam Pada. Nijagraho Jasavira. Kalim Digvijaye Kochit. Nripalinga Dharam Sudram. Nantam Go Mitunam Pada. Please chant. Nijagraho Jasavira. Kalim Digvijaye Kochit. Nripalinga Dharam Sudram. Nantam Go Mitunam Pada. Nijagraho Jasavira. Kalim Digvijaye Kochit. Nipralinga Dharam Sudram. Nantam Go Mitunam Pada. Anyone else? Nijagraho Jasavira. Kalim Digvijaye Kochit. Nripalinga Dharam Sudram. Nantam Go Mitunam Pada. Word for word. Nijagraha. Sufficiently punished. Ojasa. By prowess. Viraha. Valiant hero. Kalim. Onto Kali. The master of the age. Digvijaye. On his way to conquer the world. Kwachit. Once upon a time. Nripalinga Dharam. One who passes in the dress of a king. Shudram. The lower class. Kanantam. Herding. Go Mitunam. A cow and bull. Pada. On the leg. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada's purport. Translation, sorry. Once, when Maharaj Parikshit was on his way to conquer the world, he saw the master of Kali Yuga, who was lower than a Shudra, disguised as a king and hurting the legs of a cow and bull. The king at once caught hold of him to deal sufficient punishment. Purport. The purpose of a king's going out to conquer the world is not for self-aggrandizement. Maharaj Parikshit went out to conquer the world after his ascendance to the throne. But this was not for the purpose of aggression on other states. He was the emperor of the world, and all small states were already under his regime. His purpose in going out was to see how things were going on in terms of the godly state. The king, being a representative of the Lord, has to execute the will of the Lord duly. There is no question of self-aggrandizement. Thus, as soon as Maharaj Parikshit saw that a lower class man in the dress of a king was hurting the legs of a cow and a bull, at once he arrested and punished him. The king cannot tolerate insults to the most important animal, the cow, nor can he tolerate disrespect for the most important man, the Brahmana. Human civilization means to advance the cause of Brahminical culture, and to maintain it, cow protection is essential. There is a miracle in milk, for it contains all the necessary vitamins, thank you, to sustain human physiological conditions for higher achievements. Brahminical culture can advance only when man is educated to develop the qualities of goodness, and for this there is a prime necessity of food prepared with milk, fruits and grains. Maharaj Parikshit was astonished to see that a black Shudra dressed like a ruler was mistreating a cow, the most important animal in human society. The age of Kali means mismanagement and quarrel, and the root cause of all mismanagement and quarrel is that worthless men with the modes of lower class men who have no higher ambition in life come to the helm of the state management. Such men at the post of a king are sure to first hurt the cow and the Brahminical culture, thereby pushing all society towards hell. Maharaj Parikshit, trained as he was, got the scent of this root cause of all quarrel in the world. Thus he wanted to stop it in the very beginning. Om Jnana Timrandasya Jnana Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Shila Vibhava Praviti Namaha Shri Shri Vrindata Vijura Padapad Pankajadayana Prabhupada Nivadaya Namaha Shri Vibhava Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Vakti Vedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Vachani Nirvishesha Sannivadi Paschati Deshachani Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Shri Vita Garada Shivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, to start off with our class, I'll backtrack a little bit, go back to Friday, which was the appearance day of Srila Jiva Goswami. And also, so I want to read a timeline of his activities, and later we would understand how this is tied into our class. For he's an extremely prominent figure in the Vaishnava tradition. So, there's a note here that events of which no date is known are listed in the approximate chronological order. So, in 1515, Vallabha Goswami, who is Anupam Malik, that would be the father of Jiva Goswami, and Rupa Goswami met Sri Chaitanya Prayag. Soon after, Vallabha Goswami passes away. 1517, latest possible year of Srila Jiva's birth. Jiva Goswami meets Nityananda Prabhu and Srivas Pandit in Navadvip, and then studies Vedanta / Nyaya in Benares with Madhusudan Vachaspati. 1541, completion date of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Srila Jiva Goswami helped Rupa Goswami edit, thus latest possible year of the arrival in Braj, of his arrival in Braj. Jiva Goswami spends time in a cave at Nandagat performing deep bhajan and austerity. In 1546, September 18th, Sri Jiva assists Raghunath Das Goswami in purchasing land at Arit near Radhakund. In 1553, Tuesday, January 24th, Pranapratishta of Srila Jiva Goswami's deities, Sri Sri Radha Damodar by Sanatan Goswami. 1555, the completion of Sanatan Goswami's Vaishnava Toshani and Jiva Goswami's first dated work, Madhava Mahotsava. So that's the first book. 1558, Srila Jiva Goswami purchases land for the Radha Damodar temple. Gopal Das is named Radha Damodar's first pujari. In Harinamamrita Vyakarana, Jiva Goswami prays for eternal friendship with Gopal Das. 1561, Bhagavata Sandarbha, that's Sat Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami's most significant philosophical work, likely completed before this date. 1568, Srila Jiva Goswami departs this world. Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, 1568, Rupa Goswami departs this world. Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami bequeath their libraries to Jiva Goswami, who houses them in the Radha Damodar temple. 1568 also, Emperor Akbar gives official recognition to the custodians of the Govinda Dev and Madan Mohan temples in response to a petition from Rajput, that's the Raj Todar Mal, on behalf of Jiva Goswami, stating that he was a poor, worshipful man in whose care the temples has been left. So there's a whole long story behind this, and how come Jiva Goswami eventually wrote the Sat Sandarbhas, which directly appeals to these intelligent class of men at the time. Early 1570s, Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and Shamananda Pandit arrived in Vrindavan separately. Sri Jiva gives them a thorough education, bestowing each with an individual title and approving a special tilak marking for Shamananda Pandit. In 1572 and 1601, properties acquired in Vrindavan, as recorded in lands deeds found in the Radha Damodar temple library. 1575, approximate year in which Jiva Goswami sent his students with the Goswami's books to Bengal. According to Bhakti Ratnakar, the first shipment likely did not include Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vaishnava Toshani, and Brihad Bhagavatamrita, since Jiva Goswami was still editing those books at the time. 1577 to 1579, properties purchased in the Radhakund area. 1582, approximate year in which Srinivas Acharya, his disciple Ramachandra Kaviraj, and Shamananda Pandit returned to Vrindavan to take advice from Jiva Goswami about preaching strategy and how to build theological unity among Gaudiya Vaishnavas in Bengal. According to Ramakanta Chakravarti, Sri Jiva advises them to spread the Goswami's teachings through large festivals, such as the one held at Kitturi, with a view of unifying the subsects of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. 1584, Raghunath Das Goswami bequeaths his possessions to Jiva Goswami with three words, quote, "Directing and document to Kaviraj on my deathbed, I, the humble blind Raghunath Das, zealous of the service of Sri Radhakund, hereby place the whole of my property at the lotus feet of the idol worshipped by Jiva," that is, to the Radha Damodar temple. Raghunath Das Goswami expresses a desire to pass away in the presence of Sri Jiva. In 1585, approximate year, Sri Jiva begins writing Gopal Champu, his most significant literary work. In 1588, legal transactions noting the bequest of 6 plots of land from Raghunath Das Goswami to Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami also secured the land for the Shamasundar temple of Shamananda Pandit. Excuse me. Late 1580s, Janava Devi visits Vrindavan, so that's the wife of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. So visit Vrindavan twice with large groups of disciples, where she discusses strategy with Jiva Goswami. Her son, Virabhadra Goswami, and Gauridas Pandit also make trips to Vrindavan. Jiva became the highest court of appeal in doctrinal matters so long as he lives. So this is a quote from some KDJ. In 1590s, Jiva Goswami sends another shipment of books to Bengal, including Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Late 1590s to early 1600s, Jiva Goswami writes his last work, Sankalpa Kalpadruma. 1606, Sri Jiva writes his will, stating that its contents would be confirmed by him on his deathbed. This will was an innovative legal instrument and the first known document of its kind in India. 1608, that's Thursday, December 29th, the day of Sri Jiva's departure and the date of his last will and testament, signed by Krishnadas Kaviraj and other luminaries in Vrindavan. Jiva Goswami leaves, quote, his property to Vilasa Das, saying that he was a holy man entirely bent on the supreme truth, and that in most virtuous, the most virtuous Brahmana, Krishnadas, son of Sri Bharatacharya, should succeed him. This indeed is what took place. So just a little long, but it gives an idea of who Srila Jiva Goswami is. And one of the purpose of this too is to give a comparison between him and Srila Prabhupada, who was pretty much the second most prominent in this Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition. Of course, there was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and before that his father, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, that presented Vaishnava Gaudiya culture. So anyway, the reason for this will be shown a little bit later in the class. So as for today's verse, we are discussing how Maharaj Parikshit received the age of Kali and how he performs his activities as a dutiful king. So there are four categories where people approach the Lord. So one, from the category of being fear bound; secondly, fruit bound; third, duty bound; and the fourth is love bound. So for fear bound, people approach God because they're fearful that they would get a lot of bad reactions. They're fearful that they would go to hell, that they would become sinful, that there would be so much negativities would come. There are many people who preach like this. So it's like it's almost like a threat. And right now I'm dealing with one matter where one devotee is giving a threat that if we don't do X, Y, and Z, then this, and this would happen. So anyway, it's like a threat. So one is very fearful. So when one approaches the Lord from this angle, it's called being a category of being fear-bound. And then, so that's category number four. So category number three is fruit-bound, that one wants to worship the Lord so as to receive the fruits of one's intent, that one wants to get, maybe have a lot of material desires, want to get fruitive results, wants to get some material benefits. There are things that what they want, so in exchange, they approach the Lord to get the results of the fruits of their desires. So this is called fruit bound. And then coming up to the second one is duty bound, as in this case with Maharaj Parikshit. He is very bent and intent on performing his duty towards the Lord. So in this aspect, he is in this category of being duty bound. He's doing his duties towards the Lord. Just like you find in the whole Mahabharata with Maharaj Parikshit and his brothers, earlier than that in the Ramayana with Lord Ram. They were all performing their duties. They were very, very intent on performing their duties. So then coming to the first category of being love bound, that one is serving the Lord out of love. Of course, it doesn't mean that one who serves out of duty has no love for the Lord, but in this aspect of our conversation, then we can differentiate between the two. So one serves the Lord out of love only, that they're not looking for any reciprocation, they're not looking for anything in return. They just love the Lord and they want to serve. They want to give everything they have. So these are the four categories that are there. So in the case of Maharaj Parikshit here, he is functioning in this category, that he's going out to perform his activities. And we see throughout with all the leaderships within the Vedic tradition, they're all going out to perform their activities. So we saw with the Pandavas also, they are very, very dutifully performing their activities of taking care of the administration. We also saw with Lord Ramachandra, he was even going out in disguise, walking among the people to hear what they have to say, to understand what they're thinking, so he can perform his duty well. So, like the Pandavas who anyone could come to their palace gate and present their complaints and they would attend to it, there was the story of Lord Ramachandra also, that he had a bell at his palace gate, and anyone can come and ring the bell, any praja, not only anyone, not only any human, but any animal, anyone, because the king is Prajapati. He's the father of all the prajas, every living entity, not only human beings. So this bell was there, and one day Lord Ramachandra heard this bell ringing. And when he went out, he saw a dog was ringing this bell, and the dog was all beaten up, it was bloody and bleeding and suffering. So he went out to find out what happened. And of course the Lord, he understands every language, so he understood the language of the dog. And the dog was saying that this certain Brahmana beat him really bad, like this. And he's here to receive justice. So anyway, the Brahmana was identified, and Lord Ramachandra brought him to his court to execute the case, to find out what happened. So the Lord, as a very dutiful king and administrator, he first asked the dog, "Well, before I give a judgment, I want to hear from you what you have to say. You know, what are your thoughts? How would you like this person to be punished?" Because of course they verify that yes, indeed this Brahman is the one who inflicted the punishment on him. So this dog in his dog language communicated to the Lord. He said, "The punishment I would like to see this Brahmana gets is to make him temple president." So in those days, being the president of the temple is a very, very prestigious position. So he said to just make him the temple leader, make him the greatest Brahmana, the greatest leader. So then Lord Ramachandra said, "What, are you serious? That this person inflicted so much punishment on you, and you are saying to give him the highest position? I do not understand. Please explain." Then the dog explained. It said that if you make him the big leader, he would become proud and offend others, and then they will get punishment like me. So that in my previous life, I was a temple president also, and I was so proud that I offended other people, that I was a big leader. And so give him the big position, so therefore he can, when if he misuses position, he would offend others and he would get punishment as well. So like this was his philosophy, this was his thinking. So the idea is that behind this story is that to show that as an ideal leader, we not only make decision of our own, but we listen, we hear from the community, hear from our subjects, and try to understand. So the Pandavas also, there are cases where this man came to Arjuna's door saying, "Well, something is wrong with your leadership, that my son died before me, something is wrong." And Arjuna didn't say, well, who are you to accuse me like this? No, but he immediately attended to it. So, we also see in the Vedic Vaishnava tradition, there are leaders, like Jiva Goswami, for example, Srila Prabhupada, who they attended and they coordinated themselves with their subjects, with their students, their disciples, their movement, their mission, that they didn't just independently make decisions. So, with all this put together, all these examples just given, all these leaders, all these administrators comes under one category. And that one category is, and this is what Srila Prabhupada was, if we study in depth his teachings, especially with his disciples and leading disciples, is to teach this one category of student leadership, or servant leadership rather. So in essence, this is what a leader is, that they are the biggest servant. So this is what Srila Prabhupada, in essence of his teachings to his managers, to how to become servant leaders. And here, Maharaj Parikshit is doing exactly that he is very dutifully executing his mission as a servant. As a matter of fact, he's the first example in the Bhagavatam of servant leadership, coming up in the very first here in the first canto. So I have some notes here of some of the qualities of a servant leader, and these, there are many references from different verses of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita where these are pointed out. So I won't go in depth to them, but I'll just give a brief synopsis. So there are four qualities of a servant leader. One is equality, two, personality profile, three, strengths, and two, team composition. So his quality of equality means he respects all spiritually. He respects all equally spiritually. He understands that they're all spirit souls, that they're all servants of the Lord. Whether they're enemies or friends, he respects them equally. And two, he's very humble in seeking advice and builds trust. So this is one quality of a leader, that they are a servant, that and they take advice. Like later on, you'll understand in this pastime with Maharaj Parikshit how, when he approached Kali and he saw that this man was standing there, the cow was crying, the bull was had four legs broken, and only standing on one leg and was weeping. From all his different angles of analysis, he was understanding that yes, it was this man who was the culprit beating this bull. But he didn't conclude that. He first asked the bull, he said, who has done this to you? This pastime is here. So he's humbly seeking that. He's not coming, jumping to conclusion. So this is one of the quality that Maharaj Parikshit is portraying here. He first want to find out for sure who has done this. Because this is one thing that sometimes we can find and see 100 reasons for someone to do something, or that appears to be wrong. But without finding out those 100 reasons or finding out what exactly happened, we may tend to jump to a conclusion, especially in leadership. So this is the one thing. And these are referenced in Bhagavad Gita, like 5.3, 18 and 19, 14.22, 18.10. All these are verses from Bhagavad Gita where all these things are referenced. And another quality is that they are very impartial. As a leader, one has to be very impartial. And here, and also they have to be respecting the free will of others. as we would understand from this story here, Maharaj Parikshit respected the free will of the Shudra. And not only respecting the free will is that he understood that something, some crisis was coming. Just like in the case of Jiva Goswami here, like when we discussed how he was dealing with the Mughals, the Muslim party. At that time, what happened is that they were trying to desecrate all the temples, all the deities, to destroy the Vedic culture. So it was a crisis. So Jiva Goswami had to very tactfully approach these persons, just like how Vasudev we just read for Janamashtami, how Vasudev had to very tactfully talk to Kamsa, his brother-in-law, not to kill his wife. He had to very tactfully, because he didn't have the power to conquer Kamsa physically, but he had to very tactfully present his arguments and present reason and logic to get him to calm down and get him to subside in his activities. So similarly, Jiva Goswami was very, very tactful, and that's why he was so prominent. That's when he presented the Sandarbhas, he presented all these, to give them a high philosophical understanding. It is said that these books, because those people are so intelligent, that Jiva Goswami write these books to suit the needs at the time. That these books, especially the Sat Sandarbhas, they're so significant and they're so highly rated, and the knowledge is so complex in there that is really difficult for us to understand. And to give you an idea, and I said this before but I'll repeat it, Radhikar Mahaprabhu, who is a scholar in Vedic philosophy and teaching, he did his final thesis for his PhD from one of the Sat Sandarbhas, and each one consists of several chapters. So from one of that book, he took one chapter, and from that one chapter, he took only a part of that chapter, very small part, and he wrote his entire thesis and graduated with his PhD. So that gives you an idea as to how profound these Sat Sandarbhas are. And it's described that because at the time, with this Muslim rule and so forth, that these people were so prominent and they were so highly intelligent that he studied the situation and presented his arguments in such a way that he eventually convinced them, and he convinced the Raj of Rajput, the king of Rajput, to assist, to let the Mughals do not destroy the Vedic culture. And so then he created this whole atmosphere, and not only that, but he's starting to create the atmosphere where he can start spreading these teachings, because the six Goswamis, he's one of them, but the other Goswamis, mainly Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, they wrote all these books. They wrote many literatures, prominent literatures, as instructed to them by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they were written and they were there. But it was Jiva Goswami who brought them out from there to the rest of India through these other devotees who he instructed. So similarly, Srila Prabhupada, as a great servant leader, the Vedic culture was there, very prominent, at least at the Gaudiya Math at the time, but it was unknown to the world. So he created a scheme to bring all of this out. So here's another quality of a leader. And for a mission, there are two things that has to be there. One has to be innovation, and the other, maintenance. So Srila Prabhupada had to be very innovative to devise a scheme. So therefore he said that I could have written these books much faster. We heard our Mother Mukha just announced that Srila Prabhupada had written 80 books in 12 years. What she didn't mention, that within that 12 years he was also traveling vigorously, spreading this movement, starting it all over the world, dealing with all these his disciples, who some of them, with all their very intelligent, they came from hippie backgrounds, and their conditioning was such that he had to deal with and manage and all of that, and still done all of that. So he had to be very innovative. At the same time, he had to maintain the standard of his Krishna consciousness movement, his mission. So these are how these two figures are very prominent. Jiva Goswami had to do the same, Srila Prabhupada had to do the same. Here Maharaj Parikshita also held in a crisis, where before him, when the Pandavas were ruling, his grandparents, his grandfathers, Krishna was here. Kali didn't step in. But as soon as Krishna left the planet, then a crisis came. Kali stepped in. So Maharaj Parikshit had to be innovative and to create means to maintain the Vedic culture and to curb Kali Yuga. At the same time, he expressed as a good servant leader of respecting the free will of everyone, which means the free will of Kali Yuga personified also. So this is another quality, that they are not envious of anyone. Because the first argument that came to my mind when I read these pastimes is that if Maharaj Parikshit had only killed all those Kali personified, then everything would have been fine. There would have been no one to influence, no one to take examples from. But no, that's not his purpose. He respected every living entity. He respected the free will, just like Krishna says. Like, so that becomes one of his strengths. Like Krishna told Arjuna in the 18th chapter, I think it's 18:3 of Bhagavad Gita. He said, "Now I have explained everything to you. Now you have your free will. You can do what you want to do. You can accept or not accept it." He gives his free will. He didn't enforce. So this is another quality of a leader, as Maharaj Parikshit is portraying here, that he dealt him sufficient punishment. He didn't say that he killed him. He gave him punishment that, okay, you cannot disturb, you know, we have to maintain the principles of society, we have to maintain Brahminical culture, we have to maintain cow protection, we have to maintain the principles of religion. But you're also a praja in my state. You're also a living entity. You also deserve to be taken care of. And as you go on, you'll find out what Maharaj Parikshit did. So all the while, Maharaj Parikshit was being a very dutiful servant leader in the guise of his being the emperor. He was the greatest servant. He was serving. He was making sure that everyone is taken care of, every living entity, religion is maintained, the principles are established and upheld, so like that. So we can continue with some more qualities of a servant leader. They have they respect authority. Yes, so there are four types of respect for authority and four types that disregard authority. So we're not going to go into details on that, but they understand the principles of religion, so they understand that who are respecting authorities and who are not. So they understand, they very clearly understand the difference between the two. That's one problem we have in Kali Yuga today, is that sometimes we don't know when something is right or when something is wrong, who is doing right and who is doing wrong. Or simple, sometimes a simple word, what's the actual meaning of this word? Is it wrong or is it right? Like we had one of the past presidents of the United States, was one word is a whole big era of confusion and conflict and misunderstanding, just to understand what's the concept of one simple word. So like that, they understand the difference between respecting and disrespecting authority. So this is another quality of a servant leader. So here Maharaj Parikshit very clearly understood, and he's acting in that capacity. And then he understands, he has all the qualities of knowledge. You understand what real knowledge is, the same thing. You understand what real knowledge is, how one should act, how one should behave. So he was very dutifully executing that within his kingdom, to make sure everyone understands that. He understands a very clear distinction between the demoniac and divine natures. This is described in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So he very clearly understands these distinctions as well. And with that, he was immediately able to pick up that this activity of this Shudra king is a demoniac activity of hurting the cow, which is the most important animal, as Srila Prabhupada explained here, and the most important man, the Brahmana, so the Vedic culture. So hurting the cow and the Vedic culture, immediately understood that this person is acting in a demoniac nature. So immediately, so we as leaders, especially, you know, this is one quality that has to be developed. And unless one is very humble and very submissive, being one of the greatest servants, then you cannot understand this. And even Srila Prabhupada in this movement, if you actually look at him and analyze his activities, you'd realize that he was pretty much the greatest servant in this movement. That he was serving all the devotees, he was very finely taking care of them, even to the point of teaching them hygiene and cleanliness, even to the point of cooking for them in the beginning stages. So he was doing all of this, you know, in a very, very menial way. Without, he's their leader, but he acted in that way. Like just before, very, very shortly before Bhaktacharya Maharaj passed away, his disciples were there and they were working on the land because they were clearing their land and trying to develop it there in the land. And he was up in his room and he was watching, and so they worked all day and came back like around 5 or 6 in the evening. And so initially they saw him by the window. Every time they would look, they would see him by the window, he's doing his work. And then after for several hours he disappeared from there and they didn't know where he was. So when they finished, they were all tired, they came in, and then he came to the dining area door with a bright smile and invited them all to just come inside. And they were surprised that he personally cooked a big feast for all of them, and he personally served all his disciples with his own hands and take care, make sure all of them are very happy and satisfied. So this is one quality of a servant leader. So you always look to take care of your subjects, and this is what Maharaj Parikshit was doing here. So this is another quality. So this is one of their strengths, and they understand Dharma, they understand the real knowledge. And then lastly, they have the quality of team composition, that they don't just make decisions of their own. They discuss, they hear from others, they get ideas. Just like Srila Prabhupada, many times Srila Prabhupada would ask his disciples, what do you think about this? What do you think about this idea? He just didn't say, no, this is what I'm going to do. If you read some of his intimate works, you'd find that. He would discuss what should we do? Should we create this plan? Should we propagate like here, or how about this over here? Like that, he was always working with a team. He was never feeling that he's the ultimate boss and leader. And he would very carefully he would also perform his service. Like one time, in the very beginning days, they were thinking of, okay, we have a little temple going, then there are services, we have to cook, we have to clean, we have to clean the bathrooms, we have to do, so how about we take days? And immediately Prabhupada put up his hand and said, I'll take Thursday, I'll clean the bathroom and the kitchen. We all probably, most of us know that story. So like that, he didn't say, well, okay, I'm the leader, then, you know, I'm not going to do those kind of stuff. You know, you guys do that. No. So a servant, like Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what was his, one of his prime, you know, service? At the Rajasuya sacrifice, he was washing the feet of all the guests. On the battlefield, before the Mahabharata, he was the servant. He was the messenger of the Pandavas to the Kauravas. He also became the chariot driver of Arjuna. You know, he became Arjuna's servant. So like that, he's teaching in all these different ways, teaching of what a real leader is, how a real leader should act. He should act as a servant. So that's the real quality of a leader. So even in Krishna consciousness, in this Krishna consciousness movement, Srila Prabhupada also propagated that over and over again. This of the leaders to be the biggest servants, and to serve by by cooperating with each other, by understanding the weaknesses of their subjects, but don't capitalize on that, but capitalize on their strengths. So Srila Prabhupada said, just spend the spark of the good qualities that others may have, and that way we can promote, that way we can care for and guide. But the bad qualities, you don't do it that much, so you just keep a quiet eye on that. So these are some of the thoughts, I know I've kind of extended, on Maharaj Parikshit, his quality, and why he was acting in this way. Some of the qualities he has, he possessed, his demeanor, his understanding, his high understanding of spirituality and Krishna consciousness. So I would stop there. If anyone has any comments, Mother Sukada.
That was a wonderful class, Prabhu. Thank you.
Thank you.
So much information. I was just thinking that a great leader like Srila Prabhupada, with so much humility, was exhibited. It seems he just inspired people to work for him, work with him, and that you didn't say those exact words, but you kind of demonstrated, how that worked. And then I had a question about like offenses. So how that works, because a leader, he has to sometimes chastise but people can become offended. And from the story that you gave about the dog, and he wanted, the Brahmin to become temple president. So trying to understand how that works, because maybe a leader, he gives instruction or chastises, that person takes offense. So how does that work?
For that reason, that the rest of the class, we talked about being a servant, a leader being a servant. So, first of all, for a leader, it's a lot of weight on their shoulders that they have to carry to really understand Vedic philosophy, much more Vedic understanding. And with your position, like Srila Prabhupada said over and over, that leadership is a thankless task, that it's a lot of hard work. One has to take care of the lives of other devotees. And listen to that word, they have to take care of the lives of other devotees. So, at the same time, they have to carry on the administration of the project. So, they have to be strong to uphold the principles, and they have to be also extremely strong in understanding Vaishnava etiquette, understanding Vaishnava apparat, understanding the difference between they performing their duties and they imposing their own tendency onto the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So if one imposes his own tendency, that's when one becomes offensive.
Right.
If one carries on his duty to say, well, okay, you're doing wrong, and let me explain why you're doing this wrong, or like you chastise somebody. It's you're chastising for the benefit of that person. Sometimes, and in many cases, they may misunderstand. But if that leader, within their heart, understand that I'm doing this for the utmost benefit of the preaching, and I'm trying my utmost best not to offend anyone, then that quality would eventually become prominent.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's this story of Srila Prabhupada. One time, he was chastising one of his disciples really bad for some reason. And so, maybe it's one of his servants, Upendra, I believe, and anyway, whoever it was. So then, day or two after, this devotee went into Srila Prabhupada's room and was apologizing that, oh, Srila Prabhupada, I've offended you so much, I've caused you to get so angry and to, and that had to behave like this. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada said something very wonderful. He said, I was actually praying to Krishna. I told Krishna, I cannot help them, you please do. Yeah, so that was his mood in that way. But even though Srila Prabhupada also said on his last, not out of sentiment, well maybe you can say out of sentiment, He said that one reason why I'm suffering is because I've offended a lot of devotees, that sometimes I call them rascals, and I push them because I don't know how much effort they may take to move a cup from here to there for Krishna's service because they're so conditioned. But I push them a lot, and maybe I'm getting reaction for that. So, so all these things are there, but for a leader especially, it's a very, very, like, tender position. So you got to be careful while the service has to go on. Somebody has to take the responsibility. Somebody has to do it. And as such, like, there would be some kind of reaction. But if that person take that in the best intent that I'm doing this for Krishna's service, and even be willing, just like I'm looking at a picture behind you, I just thought about the gopis. When they're approached, that give me the dust of your lotus feet for Krishna's headache curing. You know, they immediately said, okay, if we got to go to hell to take on the reaction, but if it's for Krishna's service, for Krishna's benefit, then yes, we're willing to do it. So there are many factors that comes into play, many, many factors.
And you definitely answered my question that, you know, the idea that someone can take offense even when there's no reason really to take offense.
Yeah.
Does the person still get a reaction from that?
The person who takes the offense, they pretty much get the reaction.
Okay.
I just saw a very, very prominent example just Saturday on Ratha Yatra. I'm not gonna discuss it here. But where, you know, one person felt offended. They felt that, you know, somebody else offended them. And with all the explanation that was given that it's not an offense, we were simply trying to do our job, do our duty. They still take it that way. And then, well, this happened like maybe like a week or something before. And then within this week, they start to feel all this, well, what we would say, reactions coming to them, that now I've taken offense and I thought this person has offended me, and now I can see the light of it that it's actually not an offense. And the result of that, I'm being suffered so much. Until they came to, you know, they went back and rectified the situation, and that way they were eased. You know, so there are many cases like that. So sometimes, you know, we may think it's an offense, and for a leader, like in the Karmi world, it's saying that it's difficult to be between a rock and a hard spot. That if you go this way, then that one will feel offended. If you go this way, this one might feel offended. So sometimes you have to stand up to make a decision, like the example given with the man and his son and the donkey. You know? Yeah. Which way should we go? We listen to this person, or we listen to that person, or we intelligently consider all situations and make the right decision, or the best decision within our ability. And if one try to make the best decision within their ability, Krishna would stand up to protect. You know? That is my